Okay, good morning. Let's see. So, what I thought I would work on today are trying to translate the properties that we learned about derivatives, so basically the algebraic properties of derivatives, into what they give for integrals. And the main difference between this and what you already saw in Math 21 is exactly which class of functions it works for, but I'll just go through that fairly briefly. But it also gives an idea, an approach to trying to expand the class of functions even further. So let me recall the situation. Well, let me just note what we're trying to do. So first, we want to use the chain rule. Actually, let me do it in the other order. Let me first do the product rule. So the product rule. Which was 8.19, I think. And we're going to turn that into the, so this is for derivatives. Into the integration by parts. Obviously for integrals. And this is 12.10. will then be used for introducing a new concept, which we really won't do much with, but I just want to mention that it's possible. And this is concept of a weak derivative. So this is used later in another class. To introduce a weaker notion of derivatives for weak derivatives. I'll at least define it this time because it gives some examples to play with, but it also gives a hint of where things are going. Okay, and then the other thing that I want to do is use the chain rule, which I guess was 8.21. Also, of course, for derivatives, and turn that into something which is a substitution. So, substitution, integration by substitution. Okay, and this is 12.12. Okay, so let me just remind you of some of the facts that we have that we'll make use of. So recall, and again, the key here is exactly which functions these operations work on. Okay, so let me start with I guess it was 12.1. which we saw before, but the key again, as I said, is the condition. So if we have a function f, which is a differentiable in an open interval, continuous on the closure. So that's a very minor restriction. But then the main thing is its derivative, which exists, has to also be a Riemann integrable. Okay, so those are the hypotheses that we need. Then we can get the usual fundamental theorem of calculus, where we first differentiate and then integrate. So then we have that the integral from A to B of the derivative is just f of B minus f of A. Okay, so we get the conditions we want, but the key here is just to remember which conditions we have to check. Okay, so let's try to use this now for the proof of for 12.10. Okay, and so the hypotheses are going to be the same ones that we had here for 12.1 because that's what we're going to try to use. So if f and g both satisfy the hypotheses above, so f and g And this time I was writing out in symbols, but it's the same as above. So this is contained in the differentiable functions on AB, and also the continuous functions on the closure of AB. So those are the first two conditions above, and their derivatives are Riemann integrable. So those are the three conditions above. Then we get familiar integration by parts, which says that the integral from a to b of f prime of t g of t dt can be obtained by differentiating the other one. So this is the same as the integral from it's always a sign, so I forgot the minus. The integral from a to b, okay, and then we switch which one you differentiate. So f of t g prime of t and then there's a boundary term, so plus f of b g of b minus f of a g of a. Okay. So that's the familiar integration by parts, very handy, as you recall, for finding formulae for integrals. Okay, and so let's just prove this. And then, as I say, I want to make use of it for this concept of weak derivatives. All right, so let's see. So first of all, we want that we can... So we have these hypotheses on f and g, and we want to apply this theorem 12.1. So, but we're going to apply it to the product, right? F of g times f times g. So I want to see that f times g satisfies these hypotheses. Okay, so that's the first thing. So first thing I'm going to do is check that. The first thing I'll do is just recall that the derivative of the product is what it is. Okay, so that's the rule that we had from before, 8.19. Okay, but now what I want to do is apply this 12.1, which says that I can take that derivative and then integrate, and that's what I want to do. And to do that, I need to check these hypotheses here, but I want to check those hypotheses now for the product, f times g. Okay, so that's what I'm going to do. So check that... fg satisfies the hypothesis of 12.1. Okay, so let's see. So what do we need? So first we need that the product is differentiable. So all right, so fg is differentiable. Well, that's exactly what this formula here tells us, right? Is that 8.19 says that if we have two differentiable functions, then we get the derivative and it's differentiable. So this is by 8.19. FG is continuous because the product of continuous functions is continuous. Is that what's from chapter 7? Okay, so the last bit that we need is that the product is still integrable. Actually, can anyone remember how we know that, that the product is still integrable? Well, let me do it in two ways. So first we have f prime g is Riemann integrable since okay, well, by hypothesis, f and g are both Riemann integrable, right? Because g is continuous, and therefore, f prime and g are both, since f prime and g are Riemann integrable by hypothesis, Okay, and then you did a homework problem that showed that if you take a product of two unintegrable functions, it's still real unintegrable. So that's by homework problem, what was it? 7.4.6, I believe it was. You have that the product is therefore real unintegrable. Okay, so there's a lot of abbreviations in that sentence. Are there any questions about what that means? Is it all clear?
I'm sorry, how do you get the G is Riemann integral?
Yeah, so G is Riemann integral. This is because G is continuous. And 11.28 tells us that all continuous functions are Riemann integrable. Okay. Other questions about where the logic came from there? Okay, so of course we can switch the roles of F and G and nothing changes. Similarly, FG prime is Riemann integrable. And since the Riemann integrable functions form a vector space, the sum is also Riemann integrable. Okay, so that's the tricky bit, is checking all the hypotheses that we're where we belong, that we're in this hypothesis for 12.1. Okay, once you do that, then it's quite straightforward to apply the 12.1, and then we get what we wanted. So finally, apply 12.1. Okay, and so that tells us that integral of the 12.1, right? It says that the integral of the derivative is equal to the value of the two. So we just plug that in. So we have the integral from a to b of fg prime dt is equal to, and now we can use the rule up above for what the derivative is. So that's the integral from a to b of f prime g plus f g prime. Okay, and that's what we wanted. So that's equal to, by linearity, the integral from a to b of f prime g dt plus the integral from a to b of f g prime dt. Okay, and I guess I should have written it first, but let me write it over here. So this is then also equal to by 12, what I get by applying, taking f of b, g of b, minus f of a, g of a. Okay, and then I just move the one over to the other side. That's where the negative sign comes from, and we're done. So integral from a to b of, which we did write it, f prime, of t, g of t, dt, just sticking in all the t's again and moving the integral over to the other side so I have the exact form that I wanted, is equal to minus the integral from a to b of f of t, g prime of t, dt, plus this boundary term. F of b, g of b, minus f of a, g of a, and let me just note that often, of course, when rewrites that for convenience as just f g evaluated from b to a. Just remember to write that. Okay. So any questions about that proof? So that's a familiar proof, and the biggest difference is that we're keeping track now carefully of exactly which functions we're allowed to use. Okay. Okay, let me note a little thing, corollary that follows quite easily from that, but then gets used to try to introduce this concept of weak derivative, just because it's a kind of a fun example, and also something that broadens the concept of derivative. All right, and so corollary. All right, so let's say that I had a function which was a derivative. So if capital F, say, is equal to a little f prime, then what we get is whenever I take a continuously differentiable function, on AB, and let me add the extra hypothesis that G vanishes at the ends, because I want these two terms to just go away. I don't want to think about the boundary at all. Okay, so I'm going to take G to be zero at the ends. Okay. I guess that should be a width. So for every one of those, we have that we can write the integral of let me get the same order I had before. No. Of f of t little g prime of t dt equals the integral of this capital F, which is the derivative of the left. So I'm not really changing much. G of t dt, and this is from A to B. And then that boundary term is zero. So I just get, oh, sorry, there's a negative sign. And then the boundary term is zero. So I just get a zero there, right? One immediate corollary of what I had above. But now we can introduce a new definition and say that any function capital F that works like this, we're going to call a weak derivative, even if it isn't actually the derivative. So the definition, if I have two integrable functions, and I have exactly the same situation as above. So whenever I take a G, continuously differentiable on AB, with G of A equals G of B equals zero, then I have the integral from A to B of little f G prime is the same as negative the integral from A to B of capital F G, then I say that capital F is a weak derivative of little f. Okay, so it's an extra bit of notation that we can get, and we can kind of add to the concept of derivative. So let me just first give an example to show that this is bigger, that you can be a weak derivative without actually being a derivative. So nice example. Okay, let's see, let me try. Let me take this one here. So let's take capital F of t to be the characteristic function. So it'll be either one or zero. There'll be one if x is bigger than or equal to zero, and zero if x is less than zero. And I'll think of this as a Riemann integrable function from minus one to one. Okay, so that's the place I want to think about it. Okay, I claim that this is a weak derivative. Of this function, little f of t, which is going to be x or zero. So x if x is bigger than equal to zero, and zero otherwise. So this is, of course, Riemann integrable. And if I graph these two things, so capital F is this function, and little f is this function. Okay, so those are the two. All right, and I hope it's clear that those that capital F is at least similar to a derivative of f, right? If I were to try to, if I were to compute the derivative of f, what is the derivative of f, a little f? I mean, it's pretty clear, right? It's either one or zero, but it could also be undefined. And that's what's different here, right? So it's undefined at the point x equals zero, and otherwise it's agrees with capital F. So it's very similar to capital F, but not quite the same, right? And it differs at that one point, and that's kind of an important point, but we still get this weak property. And let's just check that we get this weak property, and then I'll ask you to find some, actually, let me note what I'm going to ask you guys to try, and then I will prove that this one is, in fact, the weak derivative. So so you try. So I claim that one of the following has a weak derivative, and I wonder if you can find it. So find the weak derivative. Sorry. There's a semantic point here. Weak derivatives are not unique. Okay. So I should say a weak derivative. Okay. Okay, for little f of x equals the absolute value of x, or b, little f of x is equal to the capital F I have over here. So actually, let me give it a little g of x is equal to the capital X I have over here. So it's the characteristic function. So it's one if x is bigger than or equal to zero, and zero if x is less than zero. And I claim only one of these exists. Okay, so the idea is to figure out which one should exist and which one should not exist, and figure out what the weak derivative is. And and to motivate that, let me just finish proving that this one over here is a weak derivative on the right. Okay, so to check. Okay, so how do I say that this is a weak derivative? So I need to compute. All right, and let's see, so where did my definition go? Here it is. So I want to see that if I take any old g here, that when I multiply it by f and integrate the derivative, I get one thing, and when I multiply it with this capital F and integrate, I get something else. So let me compute. Let me start with the left-hand side there. So let me take the integral for any g is above. Okay, I'm going to take this integral from minus one to one, that's my a and my b, and I'm going to take the little f of t, g of t, and I'm sorry, g prime of t, dt, so just like above, so I'm taking my left-hand side there. Okay, and so then the integral, let's see, so if I take my little f, it's x and then it's zero. So this is going to be the same as the integral. Well, it's zero when I'm less than zero, so I might as well just start at zero, right, and go up to one, all right? And then it just becomes t times g prime of t dt, right, from zero to one. And for this, I can now use my integration by parts, all right? So that's what I'm going to do. So then this is equal to... So this is parts. All right, so negative zero to one. And then I take the derivative of the t. So that's going to give me a one. And then the integral of the g. So that gives me the g prime. So that's going to give me a g of t. So that's a one times g of t dt. Right? Okay. And this is then equal to. Minus, and that's exactly the same though as taking capital F of t all the way, sorry, from a minus one to one, because capital F just is zero when I'm between minus one and zero. Okay, so that's exactly the same thing. A capital of T times IG of T. Okay, so it works. All right, so is that clear? Okay, let me just give you a few minutes to try this. So I hope it's clear what I'm asking you to do. So one of these two functions, either f or g, has a weak derivative and the other one does not. Okay, so we've added some things that have derivatives, but not everything. So some things we can add derivatives to and some we can't. And I'm wondering if you can find the which one it is and find the weak derivative for that one. Okay, and let me just give you about 3 minutes or so to try that. Okay, see, so did anyone have an idea which one of these has a weak derivative? Okay, so well, okay, let's try this. All right, let's see how we can do. So let's try this. So for both of them, we can try to compute the left-hand side, just like I did over here, right? So over here, I computed this left-hand side, and then got something and found an f that works. So let's just try the left-hand side for both of these. So for this first one, so for any g is above. So these are as over here, they should be continuously differentiable and zero at the endpoints. Okay, so those are the functions that I want to start with, and I want to do the computation. So the thing that I'm supposed to compute here is f times g prime, and then integrate. So let's take the integral. Let me assume these are 0 to 1, of minus 1 to 1. Sorry, so minus 1 to 1 of my function f times g prime. So in the first case, that f is the absolute value of x. So that's going to be absolute value. Well, now I'm plugging in a t. So absolute value of t, g prime of t, dt, right? And for the other one, integral minus 1 to 1 of this g of t. That's unfortunate. Okay, sorry. I've used G twice for two different things, which I apologize. So let me relabel this second one H so that I don't have that problem. Okay, yeah. Otherwise, I'm using G for two different things. Okay, so then that becomes a H of T. G prime of t dt. And h is just zero once again. So this is equal to the integral from 0 to 1 of g prime of t dt. Okay. And this one I can split up into two parts. So that's going to be the integral of minus t. So minus the integral from minus 1 to 0 of t g prime of t dt. Plus the integral from 0 to 1 of t, g prime of t, dt. Right? So now I've got everything in terms of things I know how to deal with. And I can use my, on the first one, I can use the integration by parts again. And I'll get minus the integral from minus a minus, the integral from a minus 1 to 0 of 1 times g of t. Dt minus a plus integral from 0 to 1 of 1 times g of t dt. Okay. And what about the second one? So the second one, so this one is just a straight integral, right? So this is integral of a derivative. So it's immediately from the fundamental theorem of calculus. This is g prime. I'm sorry, I lose the prime, so g of 1 minus g of 0. But what is g of 1? So I had my assumption here that that g is supposed to be a function that vanishes at my endpoints, right? So it's supposed to vanish at 0 and 1. So that's 0 and minus 1. So sorry, minus 1 and 1. So those are my hypotheses. So this is equal to 1. G of minus g of 0. Okay. It's just the value of 0. Okay. And so and this upper one, let's see. So this one I can get by just taking some multiple of g, right? So this is the integral from minus 1 to 1 of some function k of t g of t dt if k of t. Is it clear what that needs to be? It should be plus 1. Well, let me put a negative here. It should be minus 1 if x is between minus 1 and 0. And 1 if x is bigger than 0. So what I get is that k of t is the is a weak derivative of the absolute value. And it looks like this. Is a weak derivative. Of absolute value of t. And this is at least reasonable in that, once again, I notice that if I take the derivative of the absolute value of t, I get this function except at zero, right? So it's only it only has a problem at zero. This one, you should think a little bit more. I claimed only one of them has a weak derivative, and I found one of them, so the other doesn't. But you might try to figure out why this can't possibly be an integral, right? This depends only on my function at a single point. Okay, so if you try to write this as an integral of some function times g of t dt, that function is going to have to be arbitrarily large at zero, and so that's going to be the problem. So in fact, later on, one does try to pretend that this is a function. You call them a delta function, but it's really a Cauchy sequence of functions. Okay, but anyway, that's a fun example and just a little bit of practice with integration by parts, as well as a hint of the direction that theory goes in the future. So any questions about the integration by parts? Okay, so the other one, I'll just note that I'm not gonna go through the proof. The proof is again, very similar to what we did before, but I'll just note the other one and then move on. So this is a theorem 12.12. And again, the key is what are the hypotheses? And so this is supposed to be substitution. And in let's see, in 12.12, so change of variables, so the hypotheses again are that G has to satisfy the hypotheses for 12.1. So if and once again, those are that G is maybe I write in other words, so is differentiable in AB, continuous in the closure. So that's only a slight added bit of information. And of course, the big one is that it's Riemann integrable. Oh, sorry, and its derivative is Riemann integrable, same as before. So G prime is a Riemann integrable in the interval. Okay, so we same hypotheses that we had for 12.1. And we have, another function, because we're going to do a substitution. And so the second function is f. And this is a continuous. But we're going to apply it to, we're going to compose. And so it needs to be continuous on the image of G. Okay, so that's so that we can compose. Then we get the usual substitution. So the usual substitution says that I can take the integral from A to B of, and I was advertised I was going to compose, so I'm going to compose. So f of g of t, so that makes sense, right? Because f is defined on the image of g. And then usually you have to take the derivative of the inside function. So this is our chain rule that we're inverting dt. And The chain rule says that that's the same as taking the derivative of the composition. So we're going to take the integral of the derivative of the composition. And it's going to be the integral of f of y dy. And then you just have to be careful when you do substitution about what happens to your endpoints. And your endpoints become g of a and g of b. OK, so this is the substitution. Y equals g of t. OK, so if you just go through the usual substitution, y equals g of t, then that's what you get. And the proof is, again, very similar to what we did in the previous one. And that's, in fact, all I'm going to say is that the proof is similar to .10. Mainly, you just have to go through and make sure that your functions are in the right spaces. Okay. And then, okay. So those are the rules. We took our differentiation rules, turned them into integration rules, just like we did in Math 21, and it basically works much as it did there. And again, the care you just have to be a little careful with which functions you use. Any questions about those two rules? Okay, so then the next, so this is section 12.2. The next one is 12.3 and 12.4. And there what we do is switch back to what we were doing with derivatives. So after we got our hands on derivatives, what did we do? Well, we started looking at sequences of functions and trying to figure out what we could say about sequences. And that's what we're gonna do now with integrals. Okay, so we wanna look at integrals and with of sequences of functions. So integrals and sequences of functions. And this actually, the next two sections both do this. So 12.3 and 12.4. And the idea, just like before, is we're going to try to increase the range of functions on which we can integrate. So add new function to integrate. Okay, that's the underlying theme, although we can also understand more about the functions we already can integrate this way. So both are useful. Okay, so let me just recall how we did it before, and that was to work with Cauchy and convergent sequences. And so that's what we want to do again. So recall, but this time, instead of uniform convergence, we're going to look at L1 convergence because we're interested in integrals. Okay, so that's going to be the plan. So recall fn, a sequence of functions, and these should be integrable f sub n is okay, there are two things I want to talk about. I want to talk about being Cauchy and I want to talk about being convergent. So is L1 Cauchy? Okay, and we had a notion of Cauchy, and so this is going to just remind you what it is. And that was for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists capital M. And Cauchy is the one where I have to look at two functions. So for all little n and little m bigger than this capital M, then we have that the norm of the difference is small. And remember what the norm of the difference is, so let me just write it out both ways. So it's the L1 norm that we're going to be using. So it's going to be the Fn minus fm L1, and the definition of L1 norm was just the integral. I should have given myself an interval somewhere. Functions in AB, just so I have some bounds. Sorry about that. Okay, so the integral from A to B, and this will be then of the absolute value of f of n minus of g minus fm of g. Okay, so that's just the definition of the L1 almost norm. And this is our notion of being a Cauchy sequence. And similarly, we can talk about L1 convergence. And that would be to some other function, f in the Riemann integrable functions on AB. And being L1 convergent is again very similar. So for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists some capital N, or whenever I have a little n bigger than this capital N, then I have that the little f and the little fn are close. Oh, sorry, I left something I didn't add. I left out my epsilon. Let me put it in. Okay, so then we have this is, of course, by definition, the same as above. A to B, f of n, fn of t minus f of t, absolute value dt. And then the key is that this is less than epsilon. Okay, so those are the two definitions. Okay, and just like before, it was handy when we had sequences that converged to get useful facts. And so let me just note the first thing that follows from this. Note. Well, let's say that we had a convergent sequence, then the integrals converge. Okay, so if we have a sequence fn and it converges to f, which I'll sometimes write as fn converges in L1 to f. Okay, let me write it. Then the integrals converge. So the integral of the limit as n goes to infinity of the integral of fn is equal to the integral of f. So that's a handy fact. And so we will make use of having these sequences that converge to get integrals, okay? And we will do a lot of that in the future. Let me just prove this, and then we'll use it next time. So a proof of a note. Okay, so right, so if we just compute this, the difference between these integrals and take their absolute value. So if I take the integral from a to b of fn of t dt and subtract the integral from a to b of f of t dt, what I would like is for that to be going to zero, right? That's what it says, is that those are converging to each other. So I want that to be approaching zero. And let's see, so this is equal to, well, by linearity, I can just write that as an integral from a to b of fn of t minus f of t dt. Okay, and then I can bring the absolute value inside by the fact that our integrals are monotone. So this is a less than or equal to the integral from a to b of the absolute value of f sub n of t minus f of t dt. Okay. But that's the definition of the L1 norm. So this is the definition. So this is L1 norm of fn of t minus f of t. So let me drop the t's shorter. Fn minus f. That's the definition of the L1 norm. Okay, and this is approaching zero. And that's because the sequence is convergent. That's the definition of being convergent. Okay, so that's a way to compute integrals, and we'll use it next time to get a bunch of integrals of these f's when, just like before, just like we did with derivatives, we'll find sequences where the pieces of the sequence are easier to understand than the final object, and so we can use that to compute integrals. So we'll do that next time, and I will turn off the recording and stick around in case there are questions.